Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeth. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine, while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. And now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeth, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And Lynette Morgan has the weekend off. Mark Holland filling in for Lynette today. First time I've flown completely solo today, so bear with me. But I think we did okay earlier.
We did great. We did. So, yeah.
We've got Dr. Mixon with us today, Dr. Umeth, and special guest Dr. Christine Brazel. Your first time too today, so we've got something in common starting things out.
Very excited to be here. Okay. And it's a beautiful day outside,
beautiful,
so we can feel it in here.
Beautiful day. So first off, we talk about latest in discoveries in
latest
medicine.
Latest in medicine, and oddly enough, what's filling the medical journals today right now is COVID. Not that people are catching it, but they're finally publishing the research papers that were started 2 and 3 years ago. You know, that's the odd thing about medicine is that the peer review process for getting something published means that if you see a journal article today, the research was actually done two to three years ago.
Yes.
So, because it takes a long time to write it up and get it submitted, and then it gets sent out to your peers, and they criticize it, and you got to rewrite it. And
when I first wrote my published article, I sent my first abstract to my program director, and he sent it back to me, and the first line had everything crossed out and rewritten in red ink. I have never forgotten that. The first line, he critiqued the title, and then the first line, everything was rewritten, so you can imagine what the rest of the article was.
Yes.
So that process of publishing that article took me months. So forget the research part. The research was done way before that.
Precisely. And so we are now starting to see the research on COVID that should have been done before the vaccine hit the public. But the, you know, the Royal Society in England was predicting that this was going to kill, you know, about 2% of everybody that caught it. And that meant that, you know, in the United States, we'd have 20 million deaths littering the streets with people toppling over. And so, you know, they went to Mr. Trump and they said, we can't kill 20 or 30 million Americans in the next 6 months. So, you know, he put on the Warp Speed program and we got a super fast vaccine. We got a vaccine in 8 months instead of 5 years. The downside of that is we got it in 8 months instead of 5 years because we didn't have time to do all the research. Mm-hmm. So now, 3+ years up the road, we're starting to get the research. And what we are finding is that this virus does, in fact, hit people's brains at a significant level. And the number of people with long-term depression and memory and fatigue and emotional lethargy. And so the question, of course, how much of long COVID is a physical weakness and how much is an emotional lethargy? You know, they can't move versus they don't want to move.
Mm-hmm. And some of the recent education units I've done on long COVID was actually out of the United Kingdom because they got hit so hard with patients with long COVID.
Yeah.
A lot of the population, working population, isn't going back to work because they can't. Brains aren't working. Mm-hmm. And they are in this recent unit that I was watching for educational purposes was saying that the brain scans of long COVID patients are comparable to patients who have Lyme disease, chronic Lyme. They have low blood flow, their neurons are inflamed and infected, mm-hmm. and they're looking at the organs downstream as individual parts, but it actually starts in the brainstem. Yeah.
And the glial cells, the supporting cells that actually hold the brain together, appear to be the most inflamed part of the brain. And brain inflammation, in turn, causes depression and fatigue and memory and cognitive decreases. So, you know, the question is now, do we start approaching people with these symptoms that have had COVID with potent anti-inflammatories? How do we decrease the brain inflammation? You know, I think it's fascinating to note that every anti-inflammatory on the market is also an antidepressant. Ibuprofen, ketoprofen, and so on are potent antidepressants. They work by decreasing the inflammation in the brain.
And the sensation of pain.
The problem with those things is that 30% of the people that use them for 3 months will be bleeding into their gut. And the ibuprofen raises the risk of heart attacks. And so, you know, these anti-inflammatories practically cannot be used as antidepressants, even though they have a strong antidepressant effect. So the question is, what are we going to do to decrease the inflammation in these long COVID depressed sort of people? And so we'll be looking at the safest antidepressants we can find. And fascinating, although I had never planned it this way, the same things that I put in Relief Factor to decrease the inflammation in your joints turn out to be the same things that are the most potent in the brain. Mm-hmm. Now, the dose might need to be much higher. I don't know. You know, but the chemicals that we put in the Relief Factor are the same things that are being shown to be most effective in the brain inflammation.
Resveratrol, the fish oil, the turmeric.
You're right. The turmeric, all four of them. And so, but do we need a much higher dose? I don't know. But now that I've seen these papers that are coming out, I will be calling them on the phone and sending them emails, and I'll be, you know, trying to cage a visit to their lab and talking to them and taking them to dinner and so on, and try to say, okay, now, you know, what are we using? What doses should we use? I like to know stuff a couple of years before it gets published.
Some of the things we also saw published during the pandemic is, you know, when we do screening for our new patients at the clinic, we offer a genetic test for APOE4 or 3 or 2, whichever one you carry. And people that carry the APOE4 variation are more vulnerable to COVID infection, and they're more vulnerable to the neurologic effects of COVID infection.
And they're more prominently at risk for heart disease and dementia.
And that's why it hits some of the older population in the homes strongly, because they're disproportionately represented there. So one of the things we've learned, I've changed with my patients that I know carry that, is I was much more aggressive about their other risk factors before COVID. And then when I knew they had COVID, I just said, just call me. Let's talk about it. Let's see what we can do to get you healed faster, because it's going to take them a little longer often to get through the infection.
You know, interestingly, in my patient population, the impact of COVID was pretty minimal. Many of them did get it. Many of them got it later. Some got it earlier. But its influence was actually quite minuscule.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure how or why, or whether I'm seeing a skewed population. But they were, you know, minimal fatigue, some fever, some no fever, some respiratory symptoms, some none. Mm-hmm. And recovery post-COVID was actually pretty dramatic. Yeah. I'm back up to normal. So it was just like a flu. It was just like a viral infection. I'm very fortunate and, you know, I was blessed that none of my patients really got any serious sequelae from it. They told me about some family members that had more long COVID symptoms, but so far, knock on wood, we've been pretty good.
Yeah. So, no, our patient population did very well.
Yeah, no, I recognize the long COVID issues because we talk about it quite a lot, and a lot of people have been impacted by it. But fortunately, we haven't seen a whole lot of it. And then, you know, remember when Dr. Maiden was our guest not too long ago, and he said that patients who had cardiovascular impact, they actually had a better outcome when they got the vaccine. And when they were given the vaccine, their impact on the cardiovascular disease was actually better. Their outcomes were better. So a lot of different theories back and forth about COVID, but the neurological impact, I mean, we've technically thought about it, but now you're saying more published data about anxiety, depression, lethargy, and inability to function
and
memory.
And the positron emission scans are showing inflamed tissues in the brain.
And low blood flow, and that goes back to the cardiovascular risk as well. Mm. All the stuff that we do to keep our patients' cardiovascular tree healthy is going to help their brain. Yep. You know, we're not treating brain disease, we're treating the patient, but the blood flow and the heart is going to go to the brain, we hope, and we want to keep it flowing.
Yes.
And that's, you know, doing all the other things that are preventative, keeping cholesterol down, blood pressure down, blood sugar down, doing the imaging that we send people out for to find out what their specific risks are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, I saw this blurb come through on social media recently where it said people who take multivitamins have a lower incidence of memory problems.
Yes.
And I thought, yay, that's nice. I mean, we never used to be able to say, hey, what we do will improve your longevity. Hey, what we do will prevent dementia. But now we're seeing data to support what we're doing mm-hmm. and that we can say, I think it does make a difference.
I think it does. But then, you know, I want to be strong, fast, lean, smart, and sexy for another 30 years.
What's wrong with that?
Not a thing. Well, my wife tells me if something doesn't change, she may need to hire some help. But that's a whole different issue.
So. She's nothing wrong with that either.
She's talking about home help.
Is that what it is? I see.
Well, hey, let's mention that phone number. People can call in their questions for all three of the doctors today, 206-644-6006. That's 206-644-6006. Call in your questions now for Dr. Mixon, Dr. Umat, and special guest today, Dr. Christine Brazel.
Okay. Somebody call.
Somebody call.
Come on. Quit fooling around. Get up.
We have an open
pick up
line.
The phone.
Maybe someone will call during the break. Again, that number, 206-644-6006. Back with more of Leading Edge Medicine and your questions here in just a few moments. And welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic. Three doctors here to take your calls today. Call in now at 206-644-6006. That's 206-644-6006. We had a flurry of calls during that break, and three people waiting on the line, four actually, so let's get right to the calls. Robert.
I guess they heard you, Jerry.
They heard you, Gary.
Well.
Jerry, Robert.
Follow doctor's orders. Call.
Robert, you're up first. What's your question for the doctors?
Hello, Robert.
Okay. Hi. My question is, I got your program late. I understand you're talking about brain inflammation and Icarin and vitamin E. I know that in your relief factor you have four things. What's the possibility of buying those things separately and then using that to see how they do brain inflammation?
Yeah, you can do that. It costs more.
Okay.
but you can do it. Because I have them made 4 million pills at a time, so I get a pretty decent price on them. But yes, you can buy them separately.
What's the best form of vitamin E if I'm looking to buy a vitamin E? I mean, I hear DHA, EPA, and all this other stuff.
Well, vitamin E is neither of those things you mentioned. DHA and EPA are for omega-3 fatty acids. Okay.
All right.
So you want to buy a concentrated form. We have one called
vitamin E.
Ultra Omega is DHA and EPA. Vitamin E, what you want is mixed tocopherols and tocotrienols.
Okay.
Most vitamin E is just alpha tocopherol. Okay, so 95% of what you buy out there is only alpha tocopherol, and that is only one of the 8 forms of vitamin E. So there's alpha, beta, delta, and gamma tocotrienols, and alpha, beta, delta, gamma tocopherols, and each of those 8 things do different things in your body.
So the one I would buy from you would have all of them in there?
That's right, yes. And that's
the one buy from
precisely,
you.
Yes. We have a mixed tocotrienols and tocopherols. So we put them all in ours.
Okay. One last question. I'm getting a PRP injection in my knees. Uh-huh. And I was wondering, would it be a bad idea to take a heating pad and wrap both knees and take a little nap? Or would that kill the plasma platelet thingies?
No, it won't kill it. In fact, what you want to do is to have the platelets rupture. Platelets are designed to flow where there's damage to tissue. And they're really made because we're always breaking our blood vessels, mostly our little veins, because the veins are fragile and thin. And every time you bump and hit something, you're going to break some little vessels. And so the platelets flow to that break in the vessel, and they clot. They form a plug to stop you from bleeding. Mm-hmm. And then they rupture and release 9 different growth factors to heal that vessel very quickly. And so when they're injecting this into your knee, what they do is they spin down the blood, they isolate the platelets, mm-hmm. they spin it a second time, pack the platelets down into the bottom, throw away the top half of the serum, and then take that platelet-rich plasma that's now concentrated platelets and inject that into your joint. And once it's in your joint, those platelets think that they're in an injury and they rupture. And when they rupture, they release all 9 growth factors that then help your tissues to grow better and heal and repair. And that's the purpose.
So my heating pad idea would not be problematic. It's something I could or should do.
Yeah, it's actually going to increase the blood flow to the area.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, I'll do that then. Well, thanks a lot for answering that question. But I appreciate it.
Usually, Jerry, after we inject, we tell them to cool it so that there's no swelling no bleeding. And
yes, I am assuming, however, that he's trying to relax the muscles and the spasm.
Right. He might want to ask the prescribing physician whether that's okay or not. Yeah.
Are you still on the air, or is you go away? Nope. I think
we lost Robert.
Yeah, I was going to ask him who he was going to see.
Right. But whoever, because there are a lot of providers doing it now, but whoever, he may want to kind of see what they want and what their preference is.
And Dan doesn't do either.
Yeah.
When Dr. Nelson does the PRP, he does neither heating or cooling. Yeah. He just does the PRP and sends you on your way.
Yeah, most of them don't do anything at the time, but in their instructions, they'll either say, you know, keep ice on it or keep it mobile or keep resting it or lift or elevate or something.
Okay. Sometimes they have to slow down their use of the curcumin and the fish oil.
Actually, Dan has his people stop using, when he does stem cells, stop using the relief factor for a week because it turns out that the curcumin is actually tough on the stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, that opens up a line for you, if you're listening today with a question, 206-644-6006. We got Randy next up from Bellevue as a question for the doctors. What's your question, Randy?
Hello, Randy.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I have a couple of things I want to bring up, but the most urgent for me is I've got a pinched nerve in my back.
Ooh.
And never had this before. I don't recommend it. Don't get one.
Oh, dear.
I'll try to follow your advice.
I did see Dr. Nelson. He's fantastic. So is his PA, Sarah Goble.
Yep.
And I got to see a picture of that bulging disc. Doesn't look great. But I understand from talking to a number of people and reading about this that often the pain will go away in a few weeks if you can grit your teeth for that long.
That's right.
And that's what I'm trying to do. We talked about an epidural. I decided, no, it's only pain. And the pain is worst in transition. When I get up from a chair or I get up from bed, and walking actually improves the pain, reduces it dramatically.
Good.
That was kind of a surprise for Sarah Goble. I guess that's not normal, but anyway, I don't have a problem if I'm walking. I asked her what I should do to try to, is there anything that I can do to try to diminish the pain? She said, well, it's inflammation in there. And I had been taking relief factor and I'd stopped or reduced it because I thought, well, it it affects muscles, but it's not going to affect the nerve. And she said, no, I want you to continue to take the relief factor.
Yeah. In fact, when I do something stupid, I kick it up to 3 or even 4 a day for a few days to get the inflammation under better control.
Well, you're implying that I did something stupid.
No. No, I say when I do something stupid. My wife has pointed out that I am often living proof you don't have to be smart to be a doctor. So,
you know. Ouch.
Well, I was joking because I did do something stupid. You know, I tried to lift these big panels and did lift them. I was successful, and I thought that's a victory, and I paid for it big time. So she also recommended alpha lipoic acid, which I'm taking morning and night. Is there anything else that you can think of that would quiet this nerve? Because I think we got to get this thing to go back to sleep again. Any ideas? Yeah.
Well, a couple of things to do. And when you're talking about nerve pain and an inflammatory reaction, icing, chilling the area often helps. It decreases the swelling, and that can take the pressure off the nerve. Although it's kind of a dichotomy. The chilling, the ice pack, will decrease the swelling and, to that extent, decrease pain perception. On the other hand, deep tissues actually heal slower when people ice it, because the increased blood supply is what brings the growth factors and so in to cause the healing. And so to decrease pain, icing is great. To promote healing, warm packs instead.
We also have our new Relief Factor sleep product. It has theanine and GABA, which might make the nerve itself less irritated. As opposed to improving the blood flow, it might relax the irritability of the nerve that's now
getting
pinched.
It might make you a little drowsy since I sell it as sleep by Relief Factor.
Yeah. But sleeping at night with back pain is very difficult.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, taking 2 or 3 at bedtime might even help him get a decent night's sleep.
And that's regenerative in itself, just having the restful sleep.
Absolutely true. Gee, you're a smart doctor.
Thanks for
No wonder I hired you.
No wonder you did. It was a great day we met.
I would concur that Christine Brazel is a very bright doctor.
I've been
a patient at Longevity for years. I've had several other doctors. She is the best.
Okay. Good, good, good. Well, then I'll keep her at least another week.
Sure.
You should. The GABA that you mentioned, is that gabapentin?
No, it's not. Gabapentin is a synthetic chemical. GABA is actually a neurotransmitter in the brain that damps down activation. And I put the Relief Factor sleep that I designed has a lot of theanine, which is the active ingredient in green tea that makes you relax and mellow out, has a little bit of melatonin, and then it's got a big whack of GABA so that once you go to sleep, it lets you damp down longer in the night, but then wake up rested and not hungover. So using the sleep formulation at bedtime might well help you get a better night's rest. And if you've got a lot of pain, I'd say, you know, as a full-size guy as opposed to a small woman, I'd even go to 3. Mm-hmm. It's okay. The prescription says 1 or 2, but I've had larger guys or guys in pain go to 3 with very good effect.
I think the limiting factor for most people tends to be the melatonin tolerance.
Yes, and that's why I cut the melatonin down to 1 milligram. Mm. I started it out with 2 milligrams, but then some sensitive people couldn't tolerate that much. But the 1 melatonin seems to work very well with the theanine and GABA. Mm. So,
it's a nice product. I use it myself.
Yep, I use it every night too. But then I developed it.
Okay.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks, Randy. We'll be back with more calls in just a moment. That opens up a line for you to call in your questions. 206-644-6006. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic. Back in moments.
You make me feel so young. You make me feel so spring has sprung. And every time I see you grin, I'm such a happy individual.
And welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine with your calls today. Three doctors in studio, Dr. Mixon, Dr. Umat, and Dr. Brazel, taking your questions today. 206-644-6006. Have a number of people online. Let's go to John next in Everett with a question about type 2 diabetes. What's your exact question, John?
Hello, John.
Hello, Dr. Mixon. Thank you. Our question today is about a very close neighbor of ours who we're very fond of. And she's an 80-year-old, and she has a real bad type 2 diabetes. Fairly recently diagnosed, and she's on insulin 4 or 5 times a day. And the question is there a way to help wean her off the insulin that is effective and safe?
Perhaps. First of all, if she's on that much insulin, I have questions about the type 2 part of the diabetes. Because usually insulin deficiency is related to more type 1, more pancreas dysfunction. When it comes in older people, it's often a result of either pancreatic infections or trauma, viral pancreatitis, that sort of thing. So pretty unusual to get an 80-year-old with that degree of insulin non-production. There's things we can probably do to help it, but it would involve a fair bit of testing and a pretty aggressive program. You know, we would probably want to take off every extra pound of fat we could on her. We want to get her as lean as possible. We want to increase her activity. We want to evaluate her for sarcopenia, look for how much fat is infiltrating her muscles, how much visceral fat do we have, and try to build more muscle mass. Women are always afraid of getting big bulging muscles, and we keep telling them that's not going to happen. We couldn't do that, you know, with anywhere near female hormone balancing. But muscle burns sugar 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So, you know, we want to get her physical activity up. We want to get her lean tissue increased. We want to evaluate her for her fat production. And I really love to measure her insulin levels when she's not taking the shot, when she's due for her next shot, just to see how much she's actually producing. That's a tough case, but if we don't evaluate it, you can't fix it if you don't evaluate it and find out where we are.
Yeah, I mean, even at 80, I would say we should start with the basic functional approach that we always have to every patient. Mm-hmm. We know that we can reverse type 2 diabetes. We know we can reverse prediabetes. And we would have her endocrinologist or her primary care manage the insulin, but we can manage what's happening to the sugar. And if her sugar levels are falling, they can then reduce or lower the dose of insulin and then reevaluate what her real diagnosis is. Right. So we could potentially help, but we would do our functional approach, our hormone balancing, building muscle, as Dr. Mixon mentioned, finding out how much muscle mass she really has, what are her inflammation markers, tackling her inflammation markers, what are her nutritional deficiencies, what are her genetic markers. And that's where we would start. And I think a lot of patients will get more out of our program than they would ever from just doing insulin shots, because nobody's explaining anything to them. All they're doing is measuring sugar and taking an insulin shot.
And unfortunately, insulin shifts metabolism towards fat.
That's right. She will gain weight, unfortunately.
Yeah, but not the muscle she needs.
Yes.
She'll gain fat.
She will gain fat.
Ultimately, the goal is to need less insulin to do the same job.
Yeah. That's right.
Because it's an inflammatory protein. You need to have it for life.
Absolutely.
So we don't wean off of it. We redirect its metabolism to be efficient. And that's all the stuff we do at the clinic. That's I think all the doctors do this very well.
See if you can get her to come in for an evaluation. At least let us do some basic testing to see where we are.
Yeah, and in fact, this June 24th fair might be a very good opportunity for her.
That's true.
Okay, okay. Yes, we will look into that. Follow-up on the pancreas. Is there a specific test that will help determine if the pancreas is functioning properly?
We have a test we do to see if the beta cells in the pancreas are producing insulin at a decent rate, yes. But the complication is she's taking insulin, so she's getting insulin from the outside. See, normally if I got somebody who's not a diabetic, I want to see how much insulin resistance they've got. We do a couple of things. We want to find out, we want to give them a 75 grams of glucose, and 30 minutes later we check both their insulin and their sugar at the same time and see how high their sugar goes and how much insulin they produce in response to that sugar. That gives us a very good picture of how much insulin she can make and how much insulin resistance she has.
That's not a test, though, that we offer people with a diagnosis.
No,
of diabetes.
And a person who's on insulin injections to start with, interpreting it would be almost impossible.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'd probably skip that. The only test we've really got of her pancreatic function at this rate is her amylase levels, which is in our screen. But that one's not in the basic screen, is it? No, we'd have to order that extra.
We do liver function tests, but we don't do amylase levels.
Okay.
So we can add it for our patients, but we cannot do it if they're not a patient.
Okay. All right.
Okay. I understand.
And her endocrinologist might have already run these tests and not have explained them to her.
Yeah.
We hope.
Yeah. You know, if she'll bring her records, her laboratory records from her endocrinologist, it would be a big help.
Yeah.
Okay. That is helpful. Thank you, doctors. One more follow-up, if I may, on the gallery test.
Sure.
Is it absolutely necessary to take that blood test at your clinics, or can we take it somewhere else and have you verify and look it over?
Well, whoever gives you the test will follow up with it.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's kind of an automatic part of the test. That's part of what you're paying for, is to get the doctor to follow up.
I understand. And the next one offered is at the Kirkland Clinic, you say?
Kirkland Clinic on the 24th. Right.
Okay, great. All right. Thank you very much for your help and time today. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Take care, sir.
Yeah, talking about the Kirkland Clinic Gallery Health Fair happening on June 24th, and you can call and book your appointment for that at 866-86-YOUNG. 866-86-YOUNG. I think we can get to one more call here before the break. Let's talk with Vic next in Redmond. And you have a question for the doctors. Vic?
Hello, hey, Vic. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How do we help?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions that they're unrelated, but the first one is about the free testosterone levels that you shoot for your patients, for both men and women.
Okay. Well, women obviously were shooting for somewhat lower than men. you know, to give you the free values is a question, too, of which laboratory you're using and which equipment they use to measure it, because different laboratory technologies have different normative values. In the LabCorp equipment that we use, our goal we're shooting for a free testosterone is between about 150 and 180 nanograms per deciliter.
For men.
For men?
Yes.
Yeah.
So 150 to 180 nanograms per deciliter for a man. Women, you know, an 18-year-old girl will run 75 to 80 nanograms per deciliter. But usually with our elderly women, we're trying to keep it somewhat lower than that, or more like, you know, 10 or 12, maybe 15 at the high end.
10 to 12 or 15, but that's for somebody in their mid-60s or so?
4 to 8, actually.
You're using 4 to 8.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, my wife, I run 10 to 12.
Well, yeah, but your wife is younger than my patients.
But also part of individualized care we offer is symptoms. So we'll move it around if patients have symptoms of intolerance or undercorrection.
You know, it's I don't like you giving numbers on the radio.
I know you don't.
Because it's not fair. A lot of what we do is based on what the person sitting in front of us needs, what their body will tolerate. Yeah. Because I carry a lot of men a lot lower and a lot of men higher. Mm-hmm. It just depends on individual variation. We look for side effects very carefully and closely, and the side effect profile varies.
Yep.
And so it is individual-based. It is definitely lab-based. I've gone to conferences and seen numbers that are completely different from ours because they're using different units, different labs. And so we cannot generalize. And so I actually think that we're doing a disservice when we give our ranges because then people go by absolute numbers and they go, oh, Mixon's clinic does this. This is what I want. But that may not be true or right for them. And we do a lot of our own expertise and our own variation. All of our doctors see their patients differently. Like, for example, it depends upon their health, their age, their underlying, you know, medical conditions. Like, for example, as you just mentioned, your wife, we would carry her at a higher level.
Yep.
We do carry our younger women, our postmenopausal women that can tolerate it.
Well, and also if she has three fat cells on her body they've never met and she runs like the wind and, you know, jump ropes at a furious rate for an hour at a time, she's got muscle mass that she loves, you know. So she is not the typical female patient.
Right, right. And the same, you know, for men too. So anyway.
Yeah, I probably run a little high at times.
No comment. My sigh is enough.
Okay, that music means we got to take a break. Call in your questions at 206-644-6006. Back with more of Leading Edge Medicine from Longevity Medical Clinic in just a moment. Welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine, taking your questions today. Three doctors in studio talking to you. Call with your questions now at 206-644-6006. A lot of people on the line. Let's go next to Rick in Covington. Rick, what's your question for the doctors?
Hi, good morning. Happen to be a user of Relief Factor and, of course, take multiple vitamins and vitamin C, et cetera. But some of the thoughts I've had over time is our wonderful mixed master stomach tends to take all these things in, and should there be a regimen followed to take some of these with, without food, whatever, what do you guys normally recommend?
Well, most people, I know if you're talking about which supplements actually, for instance, if you're taking alpha-lipoic acid, pretty please take it midway through a meal. Don't take it on an empty stomach because if it refluxes, you'll think you're going to die. When that word alpha-lipoic acid should be emphasis on the word acid. Mm-hmm. Things like the Relief Factor, most people it doesn't make a difference. A few people, though, get reflux with the omega-3s, in which case I say take it right after a meal or partway through a meal. And so, you know, it all depends on how you and your stomach and your gut tolerate things.
Okay.
Anything you take can always cause nausea and or diarrhea. Everybody's gut is different. And anything you take by mouth, GI symptoms are going to be number one.
Mm-hmm. My rule of thumb is take it with food unless you know not to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, and it depends, right? For me, for example, I can't swallow a pill without food.
Right. See, I can swallow five at a time.
Well, depending depending on your age, impaired digestion can really it needs the support of digestive enzymes.
Exactly.
And that's digesting food first.
Exactly. And, you know, like there are some prescription medications, for example, like thyroid medication, you do have to take without food, without calcium, without anything else in your stomach 30 minutes before meals. Now, that's a separate issue completely. Mm-hmm. But with vitamins, we're giving you nutrients, and we're hoping you will absorb them. So whichever way you will take them, they'll be absorbed. So with food works best for me. Mm-hmm. Some people can swallow them without food and do fine. Well, more power to you. But
if you remember the full name for supplements, they are dietary supplements. These are designed to supplement, to add to your diet, your food. And almost all of these are actually extracted from foods of some sort. You know, like the resveratrol comes from the skin of grapes and apples and so on. So taking it with food is not going to impair its absorption in any way at all. You know, for me, it's just simpler. I take my morning pills when I shave. And so there's no food available. I'm in the bathroom. I just got up, washed my face, shave, take my pills, go out to breakfast.
Ain't happening in the UMed household.
You know, Samara has it with food for everything she does, you know. And so I have no idea what Christine does.
Well, for a long time, I had a hard time with the larger tablet, so I would actually open my capsules and put them in my morning smoothie, and then I didn't get the reverb from all of the different things. It didn't burn my stomach, and I definitely noticed a huge change in absorption because my hair and skin just got a lot thicker and stronger and shinier, so I knew that I was absorbing them better. But I tend to get reflux if I don't take them with food.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you see, you've got three doctors here who do it three different ways.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for that.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, Rick. Hey,
With nutrients, we always say, obviously, our goal is that you get most of your nutrients through your diet. Mm-hmm. But we all know that we don't eat enough and not even a variety to get your nutrients. So what we like to do is measure your deficiencies and know your medical history and then target your supplements based on what we find.
Yep.
So it's an objective. It's not let's go this week and that next week.
Yep.
It's based on science, and then how you take it will affect your ability to use it. So if you can't, you know, if you won't absorb it and you won't take it, then there's no point. So,
absolutely.
So you take it with food, then take it with food and get it in your system, absorb it, and it'll do the job that we're giving it to you for.
Mm. There's a lot of discussion around probiotics in food. What should you take them with food or not? But probiotics need to eat your food. So you probably want to put them together unless you've been specifically directed not to. The probiotic is there to eat the prebiotic, and that's the fiber from the meal that you've just eaten. So they will actually perform better most of the time if you give them a little meal to get started.
We have an off-air question that kind of segues into the Kirkland Clinic event coming up, asking if there is a place they can go to see all 50 cancers the gallery test will screen for.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's on the website.
Yeah.
It's the gallery website.
Yeah. Go to the gallery website, gallery.com.
Yeah. Or if you want to call our clinic, we'll tell you. Yeah. We'll give it to you.
Sure.
Well, tell us again about what's happening on June 24th.
Yeah. June 24th is a Saturday at the Kirkland Clinic. For the second time, we will host a gallery fair. And we will offer the gallery early cancer detection test for $12.50 for anybody who's not a longevity patient. The difference this time is that for another $245, we can do the whole longevity panel for you as well at the same blood draw. And that will then allow you a one-hour visit with the doctor to go over your longevity panel, no specialty test, just the longevity panel, plus your gallery test. So for $1,495, you can do the gallery test plus the longevity panel. The gallery test is $1,250. So it looks and is the only blood test that is currently available for early cancer detection for 50 different types of cancers. And yes, sensitivity and specificity varies, but what they've done is looked at DNA changes and they puts it through an AI algorithm that picks up any lesions that are protein molecules that are predictive of 50 different types of cancers, and it'll tell you whether you are at a risk for that cancer much earlier than other detection techniques. It does not replace your scheduled colonoscopies and mammograms and so on and so forth. We do recommend that you continue to go have those done. But for some people that either have a risk factor or a family history or cannot do any other testing, this is a very easy way to find out if they are at a risk or if they have any lesion, and then they can go and get treatment for it. So doing the Galleri test for $1,250, $50 per cancer, along with a longevity panel discounted heavily at $250 only, so $1,495 for anybody that's not a longevity patient at the Kirkland Clinic on June 24th.
June 24th, and people can sign up for their appointment for that too. Yeah. At 866-86-YOUNG, that's 866-86-YOUNG.
Yes, and we do ask that you come in with an appointment, please, because we have phlebotomists that will be scheduling patients. So please call the clinic and book your – yeah, it's not a drop-in. Please book your appointment.
It's not a drop-in.
Yeah.
866-86-YOUNG. Call in for that. Again, it's happening on June 24th at the Kirkland Clinic only, the Galleri Health Fair. 50 cancers you can determine – if you're susceptible to those. Has there been one? Dr. Mixon earlier was saying there was a few that seemed to be coming up on occasion.
We do. We have had one person who did a test elsewhere who was our patient who was who tested positive, and we have picked up another one, yes. Mm-hmm. And we do then follow up and send them where they need to go. So we will give you guidance. We won't leave you.
That sounds well worth the investment in your health. Longevity Medical Clinic in Kirkland, again, June 24th, the Galleri Health Fair. Again, to book your appointment, and do book it. Don't just show up. 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. Need to take a top of the hour break. We'll be back with more of your questions here in just a few moments. Call in your questions for the doctors. That number is 206-644-6006. 206-644-6006 with your questions as Leading Edge Medicine continues in just a few moments.